Nau mai, haere mai. Welcome to the Maxim Institute podcast. My name is Jason, and I'm the Communications Manager at Maxim Institute. This is our weekly short-form podcast. These podcasts are released in tandem with our weekly column and are a chance for you to hear in-depth from the column's author about some of the thinking that went into producing their final piece. Today we talk to Communications Coordinator Josiah Brown about his recent column. Josiah, welcome along to the podcast. Good to have you with us, mate.
So good to be here.
We are talking about your recent column for Maxim, Uncivil Religion at the End of the Rainbow. Very intriguing title there. You unpack a couple of protests that have happened in the recent past in New Zealand. Do you want to share a bit of the details with us?
So in December last year, about 12 protesters entered Te Papa Museum and went to the treaty exhibition, and they got a man up, hoisted him up in a harness.
Wow.
And he and the others painted the English version of the treaty in black. They took an angle grinder to it, did some serious damage, all while the police sort of stood by and took photos and let it happen, and then eventually grabbed them and took them away. So quite an interesting response, because it certainly would have been loud and disruptive. You've got angle grinders, somebody in a harness hoisted up. So it was certainly a big deal.
I can't imagine what it would have been like to be a patron at the museum that day. Just kind of like,
is
this an interactive exhibition or something that's happening here? Is this like a crowd thing that's going on, a real life enactment, you know? Yeah, it would have been so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have that incident, and then more recently you have a couple of incidents, one in Gisborne, the other Auckland's K Road, where people painted over rainbow crossing. So one was literally a pedestrian crossing with a rainbow, and the other was a trans flag or a pride flag that was painted over a light crossing. So those two instances, three people have been charged with vandalism for painting over the rainbow crossing in Gisborne, and I think a property in Flatbush has been searched in relation to the Auckland incident. But what you saw quickly after was the rectification of those crossings. They were either repainted or otherwise restored in a matter of days. Contrast that with the treaty exhibit being defaced. That's 4 months since that happened.
Yeah.
More even. It'll be coming up on 5 soon.
And that's still standing as it was.
And that's after Arts and Culture Minister Paul Goldsmith got in touch with Te Papa initially, asking, can this be restored or taken down? When will this happen? Te Papa responded by saying it would stay up for the duration of summer. And one of the reasons they cited for that was so that it could encourage open and honest conversations about treaty matters. Paul Goldsmith followed up in a letter in February asking again asking again for them to take it down. He said, "I would like to express my strong view that the damaged panel should be removed or repaired as soon as possible." He said that he considered the damage to this panel as something that denigrates our nation's founding documents and national identity. So for him, and undoubtedly many other New Zealanders, this is actually something quite significant, because constitutionally it attacks the heart of our country and the legitimacy of our country. So some would see that, this is questioning the authority of the government. That's, not nothing. It is a statement that's being made.
He also used an interesting word there, identity, right? Our national identity. So in some ways, what they're attacking is an identity of who we are as New Zealanders and what it means to be New Zealand, which is an argument that you would say would be made for the painting over the rainbow crossing, that they were attacking an identity group.
Yeah, certainly that logic was applied. And that was one of the reasons. I mean, despite the fact that this is vandalism and destruction of public property, one of the reasons why this move on the part of Brian Tamaki and his church members is unwise is because people will construe this incident as an attack against a specific community in New Zealand. Contextually, if you understand what Brian Tamaki and his supporters have been doing, they've actually been pushing against the government or some kind of central authority pushing a particular worldview or ideology on people. Prior to the rainbow crossing, they were protesting Drag Queen Story Hour, suggesting, actually, we don't want our kids to be seeing this. You're promoting a particular idea about what constitutes the good life, what is ethical, good, and true. And we disagree. We don't like it. And as a secular society, as a secular government over us, you shouldn't be doing that. That's the point he's making.
And so this is not, I guess, the first time this is happening in the world, right? New Zealand's not alone in this. There are other examples of laws against speaking out about things that you disagree, that you may not agree with.
Yeah, I mean, what we're ultimately talking about are different weights and measures being applied to different people depending on their protest movement. So you've got essentially the same protest action with Te Papa and the Rainbow Crossing incidents, and yet they're being treated differently.
And even though they are perceived to be both attacking identity of a particular group, they, like you say, so they are the same form of protest in that they're painting. They are both seen as, even if the actions or the intentions of the people were not, they are both seen as attacking an identity of a group, yet the response has been very different.
Yeah, I mean, you've got police investigating these incidents. They're investigating the Gisborne incident as vandalism, which on the face of it is consistent with a hate crime. But you've got similar incidents.
So that's the wording they use.
This is the specific wording of the police. This act of vandalism is consistent with a hate crime, and so they'll be investigating as such. So if you grant that painting over or in some way defacing a flag which represents a community or people group,
even if it's painted on the ground, right?
Even if it's painted on the ground,
it's still a flag.
If you consider that a hate crime, you also have to consider the burning of an Israeli flag last year in Auckland as a hate crime, because again it is it's destruction or defacing of a flag that represents people. And so again, there are two standards going on, and it suggests that there are certain people who hold power. Their causes, what they want to promote, anything goes, it's fine. But as soon as people with a different view do essentially the same thing, suddenly they come under a different kind of scrutiny.
And so it becomes a, like you said before, a pushing of a particular ethical, moral view of the world and what is good and true and beautiful that maybe lots of people don't agree with. But it kind of comes down to this, we're pushing this moral view of the world on people through legislation or through retribution or through punishment, so that,
or even just public symbols being painted.
Yeah, and so we're pushing this, but that's, and so you kind of in your column kind of frame that as a civil religion.
Well, I mean, at the very least, it's getting into civil religion territory, because it's the government stepping on the side of a given issue, saying this is something that we want to promote and support. Not everybody will have the same views about rainbow-related issues, and yet the government is taking a stance here. That's actually inconsistent with New Zealand as a secular country, which should not show favour to people with different sort of premises or foundational worldviews.
So that's different, what people different are, ethical viewpoints,
different
right?
ethical viewpoints, different ethical sort of suggestions about what makes for a good life. You know, what is your version or view of the good life?
Yeah,
and you see similar things in Scotland, but to a much greater degree. And I would actually suggest that's downstream of possibly where we're heading, where you've got these hate speech laws which have been recently introduced, where certain kinds of thought, essentially, but what an actual fact are targeted is speech. These things, the government gets to pick and choose what is legitimate speech and thus what is legitimate thought and what is not. And actually, that's quite a scary place to be, because in line with civil religion, it's this idea that there are certain beliefs and practices that you must hold to be a good citizen. If you don't hold these beliefs, you're a bad citizen, and there will be punishments meted out against you.
And that's the realm of religion, right? Belief, faith, ethics, those are metaphysical issues. They're not not whether, you know, public roads are maintained or how our water system is or the education system. They are all about private beliefs that traditionally the government wouldn't intrude on.
Yeah, and even the term religion in the strict sense is actually a modern Western invention. If you were to ask an ancient Jew about his religion, he'd ask you, what do you mean? Because religion was not devoid or separate from any part of life. It was actually an integrated whole. And so if you want to view religion as something that's separate and private and off to the side, that's one thing. But really, I think when we're talking about religion and the government not showing favoritism to any religion, really what we should be talking about is a comprehensive worldview, that whether it's secular humanism or Christian, the government shouldn't show favor or partiality to one worldview over another.
Okay. So how should we then conduct ourselves because we obviously live in you say in your column, a melting pot. Sure. There's plenty of different ethnicities, different religions, different ways of life here. So the government should just stay out of it?
I mean, in a sense, a truly neutral government or nation founded upon secular values, it's an illusion. It's not actually something we can attain.
Mm.
Nonetheless, it is still something that we should strive for. Lawmaking is inherently moral. Whenever we make a law about something, we're suggesting that this behavior is good, it's acceptable, and you know, conversely, the law that's, you know, whatever's illegal is bad and you shouldn't do. So there is an element where there are moral, or you might even say religious, dimensions to lawmaking. So in that way, there is no neutrality. But in effect, what you should be doing is creating a playing field where everybody, irrespective of their religious beliefs or their foundational worldviews, where everybody should be treated the same. And so that really should be the goal. And I think recent events might suggest that's not the case. There are certain viewpoints that are given higher status and higher privilege, treated differently than others in this country.
So preferential treatment under the law is not something we should be advocating for.
Certainly not.
We should be advocating for equality under the law.
Yeah. And where there are instances where that's not being done, we should actually call that out and ask questions and ask, is this consistent with our principles as a country? And that's always a struggle. We always have to keep coming back to what are our principles and are we holding true to them?
And I think it's difficult in some sense because if the law unjustly favors us, then it's easy for us to go, well, there's nothing wrong with this law.
Yeah.
You know, why should we change it? But we have to, even if it favors us, give up that favored status in order to have everyone equal. Yeah. Oh, Josiah, lots to unpack, lots to think about. Thanks for your time with us today.
Thanks for speaking with me, Jason. New Zealand is a melting pot. So what happens when the moral values of government collide with those of its citizens? What happens when the rubber meets the road, or more aptly, when the paint hits the pavement as it has recently? At least two potential hate crimes have been committed in the last few weeks. Police are investigating graffiti vandalism that, on the face of it, is consistent with a hate crime. Three members of Destiny Church were charged for defacing a rainbow crossing in Gisborne, while police searched a property in Auckland relating to the vandalism of another rainbow crossing on Kay Road. Several ministers rightly condemned these incidents as illegitimate and costly expressions of opinion. Yet, a comparable protest occurred at Te Papa Museum last December when activists painted over the English text of the Treaty of Waitangi. 4 months later, the exhibit at Te Papa has not been restored or removed. The museum decided to leave it up to encourage honest conversations. Contrast that with the immediate action taken to repaint or restore the crossings, and one begins to wonder why essentially the same protest action gets different treatment. If painting over a rainbow crossing is a hate crime, what about burning an Israeli flag, as was done in Auckland, or attacks on a synagogue in Christchurch? Then again, maybe what matters most is not consistency, but the cause. It would even seem that some MPs from Te Pāti Māori and the Green Party approve of protest vandalism, with photos on social media showing members triumphant in front of the defaced exhibit. Interestingly, one of those same MPs described the Kay Road vandalism as frankly embarrassing. Here's the underlying question. Should the government in a modern, secular society take or promote what are essentially religious positions on moral issues where different communities within that society disagree? Are rainbow crossings, installed at public expense, consistent with New Zealand's secular principles as a country that, according to legal scholar David H. Griffiths, does not favour the religious beliefs of any particular group, which we view as our national ideal? Some might contend that the promotion of LGBTQ matters is not strictly religious, but that depends on how you define religion. It is, at the very least, an ethical stance grounded in a particular set of values and vision of the good. Different communities will inevitably disagree, but in a tolerant society, we should be able to agree to disagree about these questions. But when a government openly takes sides or pushes an agenda on these questions of ethics, division arises and tolerance dwindles. Those in power tend to wield it against those who see things differently. There is always a dominant ethical vision in any society, one that not everyone agrees with. To that extent, the ideal of a truly neutral, secular state is an illusion. However, the question remains, how do we allow this disagreement to play out? and how will we treat those who do not subscribe to the prevailing worldview?
Thanks for listening to the Maxim Institute podcast. If you'd like to hear more from us and keep up with the rest of our research and analysis of politics and policy in New Zealand, you can sign up on the homepage of our website to get our monthly forum email and invitations to future Maxim Institute events. You can search and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. From the team at Maxim, mā te wā, goodbye for now.